Good day. This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, March 7th, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, why only certain plastic containers can be recycled. And music, from a symphony orchestra to rock to jazz. But first, Arkansas will have the toughest ban on abortions in the country once a new law takes effect banning the procedure at 12 weeks of pregnancy. The Arkansas House overrode Governor Mike Beebe's veto of the bill yesterday, after the Senate voted to override it yesterday. Beebe said the ban is unconstitutional. The bill's sponsor in the House, Republican Representative Ann Klimmer of Benton, says it's the legislature's duty to take a stand when they believe something is right.
We are the lawmaking branch. The courts can look at it and can decide otherwise, but it is our job to state what we believe is legal and what is desirable for the state of Arkansas.
Rita Sklar of the ACLU of Arkansas says the legal challenges will come quickly and the law will fall, forcing the state to pay legal fees.
I, as a resident of Arkansas, would rather see that money go to early childhood education, infant nutrition, any number of problems that we have in the state, rather than the ACLU's bank account.
This is the second veto by Beebe to be overturned this legislative session. The first was for a 20-week abortion ban, which went into effect immediately due to an emergency clause in the bill. As the consequences of automatic federal spending cuts begin to seep into daily life, Democratic U.S. Senator Mark Pryor of Arkansas says his office is already fielding calls from concerned citizens. Pryor says the sequester will have long-term implications.
We have had a lot of constituents call in. Many of those are people that may be relying on some sort of federal funding for something they do, and it, you know, could be something like a food bank, or we got some calls the other day about some farmers' insurance that may be impacted. So the sequester is here, and Congress is to blame for this.
Pryor says sequestration is the result of gridlock in Washington and the inability of Congress to reach a budget deal last year. However, Republican Senator John Bozeman says he's been getting surprisingly positive feedback.
Really not hearing a lot of calls with concerns, but are hearing a lot of calls with people saying that, you know, we're glad that you're holding the line, that we need to do something about spending. And so I think they're really glad in that regard. As far as what will happen in the future, it's going to take a while for things to develop.
Bozeman says in the next few weeks, Congress should be able to give federal agencies the discretion to move items around so they can make necessary cuts without inflicting too much pain on Americans. The Fort Smith City Board of Directors on Tuesday passed an amendment to its interlocal agreement with Sebastian County regarding the proposed aquatic center at Ben Garin Park. The amendment is meant to appease some concerns by justices of the peace about how the city intends to reimburse the county if the county foots the bill for additions to the park that weren't in the design created to keep the project under the $8 million budget. But if the quorum court doesn't approve the additional $800,000 expense for the project, Fort Smith Deputy City Administrator Jeff Dingman says that the project would likely revert to the original agreement, which calls for $4 million in funding each from the city and the county.
We do still have that agreement in place. It calls for our $8 million aquatics facility. And, you know, we do have a conceptual design that is estimated to fit within that budget. And so the $8.8 million is intended to add back in some amenities that were taken out of the concept in order to meet our budgetary restrictions. And so if the additional funding is not made available for the project, then we still have our $8 million project to consider.
Dingman says that though the design concept for the $8 million water park is less palatable for some residents, the future of the Aquatic Center relies entirely upon how much money is available for the project.
I mean, the city has its dollars ready to go, so to speak, and we're ready for the project to happen. We're waiting for the county to appropriate its funding. And if that were to not happen, you know, it does pose some problems for the city because we have spending requirements because these are bond proceeds. We've committed to spend these proceeds from this bond within a particular time frame. And if that can't happen, if we don't think that it can happen, then we'll have to reimburse the money to the bondholders and do away with it. And hopefully that's not what's going to happen.
The Sebastian County Quorum Court is scheduled to meet March 19th. The Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History has received a sizable contribution to help launch the Arkansas Story Bus Project. AT&T awarded $50,000 to the project, making the telecommunications giant the first corporate sponsor to provide funds directly to the initiative. The first of its kind in the country, the Arkansas Story Bus is a video and audio-equipped traveling oral history studio. Designed to further the Pryor Center's mission of preserving the history of the state of Arkansas and its people. The mobile studio will also help the Pryor Center expand its partnership with Arkansas high schools. Already, students at four Northwest Arkansas high schools have conducted interviews with 40 military veterans, and those interviews were later donated to the Pryor Center. According to a release by the Pryor Center, the StoryBus's self-contained technology will make it possible to conduct oral history training and programs in high schools where students wouldn't otherwise have access to the necessary equipment. The City of Fayetteville will hold a public input session next Tuesday regarding the design of the planned parking deck for the Downtown Entertainment District. The session will take place at the City Administration Building, immediately following the City Council's 4:30 p.m. agenda session. Different design options will be presented, and the public is invited to attend and provide comments. And in case you missed it, construction of 10 new cabins at Lake Fort Smith State Park is complete. Five of the cabins offer one bedroom and one bathroom, while the other five have two bedrooms and bathrooms. One of each size cabin is fully accessible, offering a barrier-free design and roll-in showers instead of the spa bathtubs featured in the rest of the cabins. The cabins officially opened on February 23rd. According to the City Wire, the cabin's completion means that all of the facilities at the park prior to its relocation in 2002 have been replaced. The original park and cabins were closed to make room for an expansion of the Lake Fort Smith Reservoir. Tonight, mostly clear with lows in the mid to upper 30s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs in the lower 60s. And mostly cloudy tomorrow night with a low around 44. Many Arkansas cities have regulations in place aimed at protecting the health of the landscape and natural beauty within their city's limits. But as Ozarks at Largest Timothy Dennis reports, officials with one local city feel that a new bill in the Arkansas General Assembly threatens the implementation of those regulations.
Senate Bill 367 isn't a new bill. District 2 Senator Jim Hendren introduced the bill this legislative session, but the Republican from Gravette admits that the bill harkens back to the legislature of at least 17 years ago when he was a member of the state's House of Representatives.
And it was filed then for the same reason it was filed today, which is that sometimes government agencies are a little bit overzealous in their regulations and don't give enough thought to the impact that those regulations might have on the value of private property and the landowners who own that property. So it's really just an attempt to achieve some balance between our necessity to regulate and to zone and to do the things that we all support, but also not to run roughshod over private property owners and ask them to bear the cost entirely for things that we need for public good.
Senator Hendren says that the way the legislation would work is like this. Imagine that you're a landowner and a city, county, or other government agency passes a regulation or zoning that directly impacts your property, and a court ruling finds that the regulation or zoning decreases your property value by at least 10%. Then that governing body that passed the regulation or zoning is liable for that impact on property value and must either pay the landowner for the difference in land value or else repeal the regulation. Senator Hendren says that the bill wouldn't apply retroactively or prohibit cities from implementing development regulations as they always have.
Every regulation that you have on the books, it has no impact on. And the implementation of those regulations, it has no impact on. But what it does say is moving forward, if I'm sitting here under one set of rules and then you determine that you're going to change those rules and those rules have a negative impact on my property values, but you can't just impose that on me and not compensate me for that. Again, that's what the Supreme Court has ruled. That's what both the U.S. and the state constitution say. So it's number one is it's not going to prohibit them from doing anything. The only thing it's going to do is say if you do something, you can do whatever you've been doing. But if you do it and the jury agrees that it has damaged somebody's property, then you have to pay them for it.
While he thinks that the proposed law is a balanced approach to ensuring landowners are fairly compensated for regulations upon their land, not everyone is as optimistic about Senator Hendren's bill. The Arkansas Municipal League acts as official representative for the cities and towns of Arkansas before the state and federal governments. In an email regarding this story, League Counsel David Schoen says that the League, in fact, opposes the bill. But the opposition doesn't stop there, as the city of Fayetteville itself has stated opposition to this legislation. Kit Williams is Fayetteville's city attorney.
It wouldn't apply to existing zoning when you talk about uses of property, but it would apply in every case, the way it's written now, if you apply development regulations to, in fact, every time the property is developed. And that's what the law says. It says, when does this bill go into effect? When the regulations are applied to the land. That doesn't happen until somebody has a piece of property that they want to develop. That's when the regulations would be applied to the land. Therefore, the bill would apply at that point in time.
Indeed, on page 4, the bill states that its statute of limitations for landowners begins either upon a development regulations approval or when, quote, a program is implemented with respect to an owner's or user's property when actually applied to that property, end quote. The city of Fayetteville has a list of development regulations that, among other things, requires developers to build streets and adequate drainage, to provide utility easements, and to dedicate a certain amount of parkland based upon the total land developed. All of these regulations require land developers to essentially forfeit a portion of their land in the name of the greater good. In his interpretation, Williams says that under the proposed legislation, if a landowner challenged any of these regulations in court, a jury could very likely find that a developer has surrendered more than 10% of his or her property value because of the regulations required of all developments in the city. Williams says that if this bill is enacted, his advice as city attorney to the city council would sound something like this.
Really, we're probably in danger any time we apply any of our developmental regulations, which would be pretty much catastrophic. That means we couldn't require streets to be built. We couldn't require drainage to be in place. We couldn't protect trees. We couldn't protect green space. We couldn't require any green space to be set aside in commercial developments as we have for decades. So basically, my advice would have to be we cannot safely apply any of our developmental regulations. And we would have a very ugly city if that had been, in fact, the case over the years.
As stated earlier in this story, Senator Hendren's bill is not new. It is based upon a failed bill from nearly 2 decades ago. Back then, City Attorney Williams was Alderman Williams on Fayetteville's City Council.
And I drafted a resolution against this very act that was being proposed back then. And it passed unanimously in 1995 to oppose this particular bill because of all the problems, the litigation, the liability costs, the lack of abilities to enforce any of their regulations, caused enough of an uproar that it never made it out of committee.
But this is a different time and a different legislature. Though the Fayetteville City Council unanimously approved a resolution opposing the bill at its meeting earlier this week, it may be a case of too little too late. Yesterday, the bill moved one step closer to law as it survived a nearly party-line split vote of the Senate. 17 Republican senators and Democratic Senator Stephanie Flowers of Pine Bluff voted for the bill, while 11 Democrats and Republican Senators Jake Files of Fort Smith and Bill Sample of Hot Springs voted against the bill. Two senators of each party didn't vote on the issue. Having survived the Senate vote, the bill has been referred to the House Judiciary Committee, but as of this morning, it has not been placed on the committee's upcoming agenda. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
Why can we recycle our clear plastic pop bottles and milk jugs, but not clear plastic strawberry boxes or yogurt containers? Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich finds out.
Every week, Fayetteville residents fill up recycling bins with paper, cardboard, glass, and plastic for curbside pickup. But some items are chronically left behind.
Well, most of the plastics they leave behind are anything that are not bottles and are containers, and they're typically labeled number 3s through number 7s.
Brian Pugh is director of Fayetteville Solid Waste and Recycling.
The markets that we sell to are very specific on the materials that they want us to collect. So number one, plastic bottles. Number two, plastic bottles and jugs. The markets for those, there's a lot of domestic markets that we have, and we are able to sell those at very good commodity prices. We're looking at about 15 to 20 cents per pound for those materials. Those other types of plastics, 3-7s, the non-bottles, those mixed containers, those are of a lot less value and they're very hard to market. In fact, domestically, there's almost no markets for it. It's all overseas where that material is going.
But he will take polyethylene terephthalates, or PET for short, your clear water and soda bottles, the number ones, as well as the twos, HDPE, or high-density polyethylene milk and detergent jugs. Plus, Pugh said, you don't have to remove bottle caps anymore, because what it comes down to are the resins, says Steve Alexander. He's president of the Association of Post-Consumer Plastic Recyclers, a trade organization representing 130 companies nationwide that acquire, reprocess, and sell post-consumer plastics.
One type of plastic is as different from another type of plastic as aluminum is from paper. So, you know, you can't have a number three with a number one, you can't have a number four with a number one, et cetera, because it contaminates it.
Plastic ones and twos are commonly smelted into lots of new stuff. There's no big market yet for threes through sevens. Like number three, PVC is polyvinyl chloride, clear tamper-resistant packaging. Number four is LDPE, low-density polyethylene films, used in produce and newspaper bags. Number five's polypropylene, used to make dairy containers in the yogurt cups. As for number six, your styrofoam cups and takeout boxes, forget about it for now. And seven's comprise miscellaneous plastics, large water bottles, sippy cups, and baby bottles, which typically get trashed too. Again, plastics recycling expert Steve Alexander.
Well, the PET and high-density recycling technology has been established for a very long period of time. And most recycling systems are set up in this country for dual sort, which means you can only sort one or two types of resins at a particular time. If the material is sorted by its individual resin, it can be recycled by recyclers. But typically what happens, only your ones and twos are sorted according to the individual resins, and it's very difficult to get communities and owners of material recovery facilities, MRFs as they're called, to then do an additional sort to segregate out, say, a number five or something along those lines.
Now, Fayetteville, unlike most municipalities, practices state-of-the-art curbside source separation. That means sanitation workers sort paper, glass, along with plastics one and two, into separate truck compartments at the curb, rather than commingling all recyclables for conveyor hand sorting later at the city yard. And last year, Fayetteville collected 164 tons of number one plastic and 103 tons of number two plastic for shipment to Southeastern Materials Recovery Facilities, primarily in Georgia. Again, Solid Waste Director Brian Pugh.
And the revenue that we recovered for that material, for the plastics, was a little shy of $120,000. It looks like $119,360 for that material.
For a time, Fayetteville's Municipal Recycling Division was collecting 3-7s from a local food co-op recycling collection center because the city had scouted a local buyer.
The plastics were going to a regional recycler in Oklahoma, and they approached, that recycler approached the city back in the end of 2011 and wanted to use the material for synthetic grade oil, which was a really cool technology that's been around for a while, and we've followed it and we know that it's a viable technology. But unfortunately, that business went out of business.
So Brian Pugh stockpiling 20 tons of 3-7 mixed plastic and will hold on to it until a new regional MRF, or a materials recovery facility, emerges. Plastics recycling expert Steve Alexander says that's better than throwing it away.
Well, I would hope not. I mean, if they go online, they can go to our website, plasticsrecycling.org, and they go into the market development tab. There's a buyers and sellers list. I mean, there are markets for certain those materials in North America, as well as, you know, there's another website called plasticsmarkets.org. So, you know, there are markets.
Because new MRFs are opening up all the time. The American Chemistry Council says more than 1,800 businesses handle or reclaim post-consumer plastics across the nation. And here's how it works. you take your Coke bottle, it gets ground into flake. It's washed, screened, and sorted. The flakes are then marketed as raw material for manufacture into things like carpet, fleece clothing, pillows, and even back to new single-serve Coke bottles. Now the number two plastic, your polyethylene milk and detergent jugs, are cleaned, shredded, and ground, then turned into plastic lumber, furniture, lawn, and garden products, buckets, and crates. The Springdale company, Aert, blends recycled wood fiber with this flake to make termite-resistant composite building materials, a successful pioneer in the industry. Last count, according to EPA, Americans generated 31 million tons of plastic waste, representing 12% of municipal solid waste, but only 8% of that was recycled. But there's breaking news regarding the fives. Again, Steve Alexander with the Association of Post-Consumer Plastic Recyclers.
The next greatest thing out there, the next great thing is polypropylene, which are your tubs and your lids, some of your paint buckets and things of that nature, yogurt tubs, your butter tubs, yogurt tubs and things of that nature. And that is coming on. But the reality is that you have to get your communities to segregate that material.
Steve Alexander says the plastics recycling is still in the embryonic stage. Now, early on, bales of mixed U.S. plastics were sold and shipped overseas to China, which needed scrap plastic to manufacture lower-cost products sold in-country.
Well, the distinction is that they have the labor force. You look at the way that they separate their material. You know, I mean, it's very prehistoric. I mean, there's no other way to get around it. I mean, it's very rudimentary, where we have modern systems and health and safety and labor laws. They'll take a bale of plastic and spread it over a farm field and then have people segregate it out by hand, you know, to separate all the material by hand. We don't do that in this country, in North America, and we don't do that in North America.
One recent study of China's mixed plastics recycling industry by a Sonoma, California company counted tens of thousands of independent hand recyclers. But demand for U.S. baled mixed plastics has greatly diminished in China, the study found, due to more Chinese consumers purchasing plastic-clad merchandise in their country's supply chain. So until we have abundant MRFs, materials recovery facilities, at our disposal to turn our recyclable plastics into new things, a good portion of it will end up in the local landfill for now. But take solace. The emissions from degrading plastics and other trash in sealed filled landfills are increasingly being recovered and cogenerated as valuable methane. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
One, two, and one, and two, and ready, and go!
The music you hear is being played by Fort Smith's Northside High School Jazz Band. And the voice you heard leading them is Adam Coates, music theory instructor and director of the jazz band. Next Tuesday, March 12th at 7 p.m., the 30-member band will take to the stage for a show entitled Band Camp or Bust 2. Coates has been with Northside for 6 years and says that until last year, there hadn't been a specific Come Hear the Jazz Band event.
We play with the concert band and symphonic band on the spring concert and on the Christmas concert. And we've played area performances. They're just real short, but this is the first real extended concert featuring the jazz band. We've been able to play a large amount of material, upwards of 10 pieces.
Members of the jazz band must also be members of the Northside Band. Many of these kids attend summer band camps for an alternative learning experience, but that costs money. So this event serves as a fundraiser to send the band kids to camp. Brenda Yelvington is a very dedicated parent. While she does have a daughter at the school, she isn't in the jazz band. Yet Brenda is here during practice as the chairperson of the Jazz Show Parent Committee. She says they won't be selling tickets for next week's show, though they will be accepting donations.
What I like about that is the kids aren't asking for a handout. They're working really hard on their own time. They get no credit for this in class. It's all after school. They put on a great show, and people are paying them to hear their show, hear the entertainment they're providing. It's like a musician's dream, right? You perform, people like it, and they pay to hear you. And that's the model that was set up through the committee and the directors.
Last year, they raised $16,500. They were shocked, allowing 66 students to attend summer band camp on scholarship. This year, the goal is $18,750 to send 75 kids, students that wouldn't get to go otherwise. Brenda says the kids are held accountable for $50 of the camp's cost, but awarded the remainder. Jerry Trejo is a senior who plays the trumpet. He's been a member of the jazz band all through high school and was able to attend camp last summer.
It was good to hear what other band directors and students had to say about the music and how to play things differently, you know, a different interpretation of what other people played. Yeah.
Trejo says just being in jazz band is unique and provides a diverse outlook.
It's a really awesome experience. It's not your typical music that you play in band. It's more laid back and there's more of a groove to it. It's a really nice experience.
Coates, the band's director, was in his high school band and jazz band.
Jazz band, students have a chance to improvise their own solos, which we would not really work well on the marching field with a larger, with a smaller group and with specific sections of music where they're kind of open for improvisation. The kids can kind of put their own spin on music, kind of how they want to do it.
While Trejo is one of about 10 trumpet players, Malika Momond is just one of two bassists. Also a senior, she was the only one before this year. Competition isn't quite as high with the bass as it is for the trumpet.
Honestly, the rhythm section is a little bit different because not many people know how to read charts, so that's different. But it's fun. There's an incoming sophomore right now who's in there playing, and it's been different for me having to switch off, because I've usually just been one bass player. But I'm glad that he's getting experience, so next year he'll be able to really lead the band.
Both Momond and Trejo plan to continue their music when they move on to college next year. But that's next year. Next week, they'll both be playing at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith's Second Street Live Stage. UFIS recently acquired the completely professional venue, a place that, until last year, many of these students had never been to, let alone played in.
It's like a jazz club. It is so cool. And to watch their faces last year when they walked into that facility, those kids were overwhelmed.
Attendees to next week's show can expect a completely professional performance. These students work hard. There isn't a class period for jazz band, so they come in one afternoon each week. Two afternoons as the performance date approaches, often sacrificing work hours, family, or fun time. Members of the marching band don't get off easy. Many of them will be on hand Tuesday night as well.
We try to involve as many band students as possible in the show, and we do that by having, if they want to work backstage, if they want to work in the front, we always have people that want to help serve drinks and hand out programs. We have an acting troupe. There's, I think I have 10 kids in the acting troupe, and they keep the show light. You have all this serious jazz music, and then you have this little acting troupe that comes in, and they get the crowd going. They might tell them a classic band joke or two, or do a little skit, little things to let the audience realize that they're still kids having a great time at a show.
Many of the band and jazz band students are all state, meaning their talents have been recognized. Brenda Yelvington credits much of this success to the diversity at Northside.
There is a uniqueness to Northside that permeates everything here. And I think a lot of it is the diversity and the kids, there's an environment of individuality that they foster and respect for your individuality, and that translates to band. And the band directors, when I saw how they interacted with these students, I saw this mutual respect. The directors respected them, and they respected the directors, and because of that, they were achieving things bigger than what they could have done on their own.
Adam Coates is an excellent example of the dedication of a band director. Not only does he teach and direct at Northside, but also at two Fort Smith junior highs, driving back and forth throughout the day, every day. Yet he doesn't complain.
Well, I love it. And also, I get the best of both worlds. I get to teach the junior high level and the high school level. So I get to see these kids progress from day one of beginning band in seventh grade all the way up to graduation and beyond. And that's a really cool thing.
Down the rhythm groove on the shuffle. Here we go. 1, 2, and 1, 2, set, go.
Last year, the venue was full. This year, they're hoping for standing room only. The Northside High School Jazz Band will perform next Tuesday evening, March 12th, at 7 p.m. at University of Arkansas Fort Smith's 2nd Street Live Stage. For more information, call 479-783-6611. It is Thursday, March 7th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and joining me now is Becca Martin Brown. She is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
You know, I thought I'd read every children's book that there is. But I don't know Miss Nelson is missing.
Okay.
I don't know Miss Nelson.
I don't know Miss Nelson either.
But she's missing.
That's what we hear.
Miss Nelson is apparently a teacher.
Right.
A wonderful teacher who is beloved by her class, and she disappears. And they get the worst substitute in the world. And then they wonder what happened to Miss Nelson. And if you wonder what happened to Miss Nelson, you can find out at 7 o'clock tonight at Arts Live Theater in Fayetteville, because the kids of Arts Live Theater will be putting on a play titled Miss Nelson is Missing. $6 to $8 tickets. Don't think you have to have kids to go. If you're just having one of those days and you need to go and enjoy yourself, this is a great place to do it.
All right. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Saturday night, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas will present its latest concert, Masterworks 3, at Walton Arts Center. This week, Paul Haas, the conductor for SONA, talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about the concert and the concept of presenting Masterworks.
Masterworks are intended to be the greatest works of music ever written, and which have withstood to a certain extent the tests of time. You know, there are a lot of works which were popular when they were written, and then you go 50 years later and nobody's ever heard of them. Mm-hmm. It's the way of history to be unkind to works that are not applicable to the human nature throughout time. But what we want to do is bring our audiences in the masterworks, those pieces which have. And Verdi Requiem it's pretty much the culmination of requiems, or requia, if you want to be correct.
When people think of a requiem, this is the one that pops it to the top of the list.
Absolutely, with its very, very strong offbeats in the bass drum. Everybody knows those offbeats, whether you think you do or you don't. It is one of those moments in right at the beginning of the Dies Irae. That's the second movement. Well, you have a few seconds to put on your seatbelts, and then all of a sudden you got this flying string lick that goes all the way down, and then you have these crazy, crazy beats by the bass drum. It'll knock your socks off.
And as we've mentioned before, it's one thing to hear that on record. It's another thing to be in the hall.
Absolutely. Even if you turn up the volume to 11 on your microphone, on your headphones, you still won't get that same visceral, gut-wrenching pop. Really an amazing thing. And it's not just about that moment. It's about the entire piece. We've got a chorus on stage, of course, made up of SONA singers and other groups from the community under the direction of Terry Hicks, whom we all know and love. Mm-hmm. And we've got an amazing orchestra up there on stage, and we'll have four vocal soloists with whom I've had the pleasure of working just a week ago. And I can promise you these voices will thrill. You just have no idea what's coming.
When you're working on something like this and you have a rehearsal, can you, because you talk about that gut shot, that you know, this is that robust sort of thing. Can you tell in that rehearsal that, yeah, we're going to get this?
Absolutely. I mean, when I was working with the singers, for instance, you know, you go into each rehearsal hoping for the best, but, you know, with the knowledge that perhaps there'll be a weak link or it'll require a little more assistance than you might imagine. But I just got to that rehearsal and they knocked it out. I mean, it was all of them. All of them have quite extensive training and performance history in Verdi operas, and a couple of them have actually performed this this work before, and they have the voices. I mean, they have astonishing voices.
This, of course, a Requiem, it was written in the memory of someone Verdi admired very much.
Absolutely. Mantoni was quite a figure in Italian history and someone Verdi looked up to greatly. And it's kind of like he was waiting until the right moment to write this piece. And of course, through time, Requiem started out as the ritual song, if you will, at the death of someone.
It was part of the liturgy.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a Gregorian chant that they used to sing, and they still do, in Roman Catholic services. And what happened throughout time is that composers got more and more interested in the human, less the fire and the brimstone, and that's it, and kind of good luck of the Roman Catholic.
The tip of the hat and
right,
on your
exactly.
way, sir. Yes.
And got more interested in the people who were left behind, got more interested in the human reaction to the loss of a loved one. And this was Verdi's way, or a way for Verdi to, and all the composers you find who've written Requiem, they're trying to say something, they're trying to comfort, they're trying to provide solace, not only for the people around them, but for themselves. I mean, of course, all of us deal with those questions. What is life then? What is death? That's the natural next question. So, yeah, he was waiting for an excuse, it seems like, and what an excuse it was, and what a piece that followed.
There are tickets left, but there are not many.
There are not many tickets. We are very proud to be in a position where we sold out our Christmas concert, we sold out our January concert, and we're about to sell this concert out too. So we would recommend highly that if you don't have your tickets already, you might want to think about doing that.
There are a limited number of seats. You can't keep selling forever.
Exactly. Exactly. You might force us to do another concert, but we'll wait till next season for that.
Paul Haas is the conductor of the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, or SONA. He talked with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about Saturday night's concert featuring Verdi's Requiem. The concert is at Walton Arts Center, and it begins at 7:30. This is Ozarks at Large. It's also March 7th, 2013, and joining me now is Jody Besnoska, Vice President for Communications at Walton Arts Center.
Hi.
Hello.
March 7th.
I know.
Wow.
Moving right along.
Busy, busy, busy.
Well, it's kind of a quiet weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's SONA Saturday night.
Yep.
But other than that, it's...
Other than that, March is a little bit of, what is the saying? It's a little bit of a lamb for us.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of programming going on, mostly because of spring break.
Right.
You know, but so yes, we do have SONA Masterworks, the 7:30 concert on Saturday. I believe there will be a pre-show conversation probably in Star Theater. They usually start those about 6:45. And then skip ahead to the 14th of March. That's a Thursday. We have Sir James Galway and Lady Jean Galway, their concert. Lots of it's a great timing on that one for St. Patrick's Day because they will be playing Irish jigs, Irish music. We'll have a little Irish celebration going on in the lobby.
Green beer?
I hope so. If not green beer, green drinks,
yeah.
For sure. But that will be fun. And, you know, we like, it's really fun for us when we get to have legendary people like this on our stage. I mean, He's the Yo-Yo Ma of the flute. So that's the 14th. That's Thursday. On the 15th, which is Friday, One Night of Queen is returning. We had this show about 2 or 3 years ago. It's a fantastic concert. Obviously you can't hear Queen, but you can hear these guys. They're Gary Mullen and the Works, and they are sort of the top-level tribute band to Queen, and they do all the songs that you love.
So Bohemian Rhapsody, oh, yeah. Under Pressure, mm-hmm. all those.
Fat yeah. Bottom Girls, We Will Rock You, We Are the Champions, all of that. Mm-hmm. And it's a party. It's a great show. That's an 8 o'clock show on the 15th. That one is nearing sellout, so don't wait on that one. On the 16th, we will have the Grégoire Marais Quartet, and he is our final Starlight Jazz artist. He is a jazz harmonica player. So excited for him. He will do two concerts at 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock. That's in Star Theater. So that's your last shot for jazz in the intimate theater for the Walton Arts Center season. I know the KOAF season picks up after that. And then let's skip ahead to the 28th of March, also a Thursday, I believe. That will be Mr. Garrison Keillor doing his brand new retrospective.
Okay.
That will be a 7 o'clock performance, and I believe that one is also, if not sold out, it is very close. And then Circa, which was our next show on our 10x10 art series, will be on the 30th of March. Circa is a... obviously, because the name says Circa.
Cirque Eloise, Cirque du Soleil.
It's. I would say that it's similar to those, but it's going to be more like a dance show than a, circus show. They will have elements of circus, but it is going to be a little bit more of a modern dance kind of interpretation of it.
Not quite as much acrobatic.
Right.
And
right.
And you flying know, from the ceiling.
Yeah.
Or
you probably won't have clowns or anything like right. that, But you will have, people trained in this art form. Performing in a little bit more of a modern dance way. So kind of intrigued for that. And that one also selling very well. So don't wait too long to get your tickets for that. And I can't really believe it's time to look ahead into April, but April is busy. Lots going on April.
Oh, I was kind of looking forward to that calendar as well.
Yeah. April 2nd, the Washington Regional Gala that they do every year will have Cool in the Gang. Let's see, the University of Arkansas Inspirational Choir will perform on the 4th. And we will have on the 6th of April, the first of our Arts for Animals series. This is a new sort of partnership we're doing with the Humane Society where we're inviting people to purchase tickets to shows with animal themes.
Which is so cool.
Yeah. And for every ticket you buy during the month of March, we'll give $1 to the Humane Society. And so April 6th will be the first show in that lineup. And that's the Popovich Comedy Pet Theater.
That's awesome because animal lovers are already going to these animal shows. Yeah. And so they're probably very thrilled to know that some of their money's going to the
Humane Society. Because for some reason, we have all these animal shows this spring. Yeah. We have the Comedy Pet Theater, we have War Horse, we have Scooby-Doo, we have Jungle Jack Hannah coming as part of Artisphere, and a couple of others. So that's the first week of April. The second week of April is all about Anything Goes from the 9th through the 14th. Multiple performances of that, lots of tickets available for that. Don't miss that show. It's so wonderful, so beautiful. It's the Cole Porter musical with all of those Cole Porter standards. And it's produced by the Roundabout Theater Company, which is one of the few nonprofit theater companies on Broadway. And so we like that.
Right.
We love it when the nonprofit company there can tour because they...
it's expensive to tour.
It's very expensive. It's very expensive to put a show up on Broadway. So if a nonprofit theater company can do it, it's really good. Mm-hmm. So that's the 9th through the 14th. And let's see. Theater Squared is going to kick off their final show on April 18th, Next to Normal, wonderful Broadway musical. And then on the 19th of April, we'll have the second Caravanserai performance.
They're coming back.
Yeah, which is going to be really, really great.
Moroccan.
Yes, we're focused on Morocco, but it's not the same musicians that we had last time.
Right.
This time it's the Orchestra of Fez. And then the Monterey Jazz Festival on tour on the 20th of April. So that's coming up too. All kinds.
And then American Idiot also.
Yes, and then American Idiot at the end of April. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about Hair, and Hair was the new rock musical of the 60s. And American Idiot is being billed in a similar way, like the new rock musical of the 21st century. It's based on the album, the Green Day album, and it has some similar themes to Hair. It's about young people transitioning out of being kids and transitioning into being adults, and there's, you know, with the war sort of behind them and driving the drama mm-hmm. of the show. And I did want to also mention that we put Delbert McClinton on sale. He's coming back on May 5th.
Okay.
So that's only a couple months away, and so short time period to get your tickets for that.
Okay. All right. And people can get their tickets?
Get their tickets at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600 or come down to the box office and visit us.
Okay. Thanks, Jody.
Thank you.
Jody Besnoska is Vice President for Communications at Walton Arts Center. The South by Southwest Music and Media Festival takes place next weekend in Austin, Texas. But if you can't make it, no worries, as some of the bands will be making a stop in Fayetteville this weekend. Ozarks at Largest Katie Henriksen has this preview.
If you're a music journalist, you've been hearing about South by Southwest now for months, and the press releases just get out of control right about now. A week prior to the Music and Media Conference in Austin that now, in its 27th year, has become the most anticipated music conference of the year, drawing hundreds of bands from across the country and the globe in hopes of becoming the next big thing. The fest now boasts many corporate sponsors, including Yahoo, eSurance, Chevy, and Doritos, with some decrying the corporatization of what used to feel much more independent. Spanning March 8th through the 17th, with the music portion the 12th through the 16th, two featured interviews include with Depeche Mode and 50 Cent. Last year's keynote speaker was none other than Bruce Springsteen, and this year's is Dave Grohl. Now, Dave Grohl is not rolling through Fayetteville on the way down to Austin, but there are some bands making a stop. So for those of us who love live music but can't make the 9 hours down to Austin, you'll have a chance to see some of those acts before they play South by Southwest. This year, I've spotted 5 bands playing Fayetteville prior to heading down to try and generate buzz down in Austin. And that first band is White Mystery, a brother and sister garage rock duo from Chicago. They're playing Rogue on Dixon Street tonight, along with local bands Resin Hands, Mr. Blister, and Ambrose Rancheros. White Mystery Show is going to be a heavy hitter with garage rock and other loud noises. Perhaps folk rock is more your thing, and you're also under 21. Well, you're in luck, because Waterliers, an Oxford, Mississippi duo, is coming through at Nightbird Books Friday night. They play a melancholy folk rock. You were crying. There's also music at Nightbird Books Saturday night when the Portland, Oregon trio Brainstorm stops in. They play a rhythmic power pop.
And towards the goal.
Now, there's another show Saturday night at JR's Lightbulb Club when South Philly's band Dangerous Ponies stops in. Now, I've looked at their site, and they are a collective, and I've seen videos where they've had as many as 7 people on stage. I'm not sure how many touring members there are. You can hear jangly 60s pop as well as 90 rock in Dangerous Ponies. They'll be playing with local Martin Benberg. Perhaps you're out of town this weekend. Well, you still have one more chance to catch a band on the way down to South by Southwest. That's on Tuesday night at George's Majestic Lounge when the Capecchi Family Band hits the stage. And I don't know. Perhaps you want to go to an actual festival, but you're not going to make it to South by Southwest. Well, the Valley of the Vapors Independent Music Festival, March 15th through 19th down in Hot Springs, is your chance to do just that. They've capitalized on all the bands coming through for South by Southwest, so a lot of bands that are playing South by Southwest will be playing Valley of the Vapors. For more information on that festival, go to valleyofthevapors.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Illinois River Watershed Partnership and volunteers will plant 4,000 tree seedlings along creeks in Bentonville, Fayetteville, Gentry, Prairie Grove, Rogers, and Springdale this Saturday. Volunteers are needed. More information is available on the web at irwp.org. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Siloam Springs, and Fort Smith. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas. Antoinette Grajeda will be joining me tomorrow for an all-new daily edition of Ozarks at Large. Until then, thank you so much for listening and have a good Thursday.